A bike-friendly community idea continues to cause debate in Haines, and an environmental group accuses the Tongass of breaking its own timber sale rules. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Emily Files. Those stories and more up next. A borough advisory committee that once received little attention in Haines has recently become a place of contention and debate. New scrutiny of the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee started a few months ago and continues amid a debate over the town becoming a bike-friendly community. As KHNS's Abby Collins reports, the most recent meeting spanned from bikes to committee makeup to the nature of democracy.
The issue of democracy fundamentally is one of people getting together and sharing differences of opinion. And if we can do it politely, we're doing all right.
That's committee member Burl Sheldon. How this high-level observation about government became part of the conversation says a lot about the turn the Parks and Rec meetings have taken in recent months. In February, about 150 residents turned out to a committee meeting to voice opposition to a proposed winter recreation map. Many had the impression that the map would restrict motorized access in parts of the Chilkat Valley. Now, the debate is over a proposal to apply for a bike-friendly community designation through the League of American Bicyclists. Here are some of the objections from the latest meeting.
I, as a resident of Haines, am firmly and strongly against this proposal in any form.
I'm strenuously against the bike-friendly designation in this town. We all are friendly to bikes. I don't know anybody that I personally know that's run over a biker in a long time.
That was Mike Binky Sr. and Terry Pardee. Don Turner Jr. added that he's considering setting up game cameras to catch bicyclists not playing by the rules of the road. Chip Lendy spoke out in favor of the bike-friendly designation.
All it does is tell visitors in coming to Haines that we're friendly to bikes, just like we're friendly to heliskiers, we're friendly to ATVs, we're friendly to hikers, we're friendly to snow machiners, we're friendly to cruise ship people.
Communities that qualify for the designation receive recognition and advice on making bike-friendly improvements. Sitka, Juneau, and Anchorage are all part of the awards program. The committee heard from a representative in Sitka who had positive things to say about the bike-friendly designation. But that raised more contention.
This gentleman right here called Mr. Osborne in Sitka and asked him to sugarcoat that. That's wrong, and I ask you to strike that from the record.
That's Binky accusing committee member Tom Ely of trying to put a positive spin on the idea. Ely is the president and founder of Sockeye Cycle, a bicycle tour business. At a previous meeting, concerns were raised about whether Ely has a conflict of interest. Ely said he did not influence the Sitka presentation. He said the issue was getting overly politicized.
If we make every issue on our agenda a drawn-out battle because one side of the community doesn't like it or the other side of the community doesn't like it, it's going to be really frustrating for us as individuals.
The committee ultimately voted to recommend the assembly approve allowing a volunteer to fill out the bike-friendly application. Lori Smith voted against it, saying they needed more information to help alleviate concerns from the public. By the end of the meeting, concern over an us versus them mentality in the borough was still evident. Dave Long, who is set to be appointed to the Parks Committee, said Ely is contributing to that.
You need to stop perpetuating the us and them, because you said it, I don't know how many times tonight, but it will continue if you want to keep your attitude.
But Ely pushed back on that accusation.
I've made it clear that this community and all these committees, the borough assembly, the mayor, we need to work together. We need to compromise. No one's going to get everything they want. We'll get some of what we want.
This kind of controversy over the bike-friendly designation is unusual, according to Amelia Neptune. She directs the Bike-Friendly America program for the League of American Bicyclists. She said this is the first time she's heard of the program causing this kind of division. Reporting in Haines, I'm Abby Collins.
A Washington, D.C. environmental group is accusing the Tongass National Forest of breaking its own timber sale rules. Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility cites internal Forest Service documents in its critique of Tongass management. The National Forest includes most of Southeast Alaska. Executive Director Jeff Rook says forest managers didn't sufficiently review or monitor sales. He says they also allowed logging companies to cut corners.
And as a result, there were significant monetary losses, and they didn't accomplish their environmental goals. And the oversight was so poor that the Tongass National Forest didn't even have copies of the contract, let alone the backup data.
Tongass officials say they're reviewing the accusations and are not ready to comment. The Public Employees Group says Tongass managers improperly allowed loggers to cherry-pick more valuable timber within sale areas, including spruce and cedar. Alaska Forest Association Executive Director Owen Graham says that's the only way to make timber sales economic.
What they seem to be saying is the Forest Service should have forced them to log more hemlock trees, you know, or lower value trees, and that would have got them more stumpage. And that doesn't make any sense. If you harvested lower value trees, you get less stumpage because their trees are worth less.
The Ketchikan-based trade association has lobbied the Forest Service to provide enough timber to keep what's left of the region's industry alive. Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility is calling for an in-depth forensic audit. Several Tlingit people from around Southeast Alaska have returned from a trip to the Smithsonian Institute. Several elders examined hundreds of Tlingit artifacts in the Smithsonian's collection, providing context for their own research and for museum staff. KSTK's Aaron Bolton reports.
Several Tlingit elders from Wrangell to Juneau traveled to Washington, D.C. through the Recovering Voices program, a Smithsonian initiative aimed at preserving indigenous languages and cultures. Virginia Oliver of Wrangell was among those who examined hundreds of Tlingit artifacts in the Museum of the American Indians collection. From bentwood boxes to blankets and daggers, Oliver and the elders studied their history.
And when they opened the doors, I have to tell you that the feeling was really heavy. I mean, it was so much spirit in there where all of our ancestors have been stored for however long since when they were collected.
Every participant prioritized 100 items out of thousands of pieces. Oliver selected 80 items from Wrangell, 10 from Edelin Island, and 10 from her hometown Cake.
They had the first 15 items that all of the participants had chosen right out on the tables, and you could walk right in there and look at them. We got together and we started a prayer to say hello to our ancestors and to let them know that we were there and we were speaking Tlingit. We did a song, a potlatch song, kind of a welcome opening for them. And so we opened the entire visit with that.
Information about several items' history was limited to who collected it, the year it was collected, and sometimes a location. There was no way to know how old items actually were, and sometimes even what they were used for. As part of the program, Smithsonian staff hopes participants are able to provide more information.
Then they had a weaver come in. Her name was Shken, and she is a teacher in Juneau, and she was a weaver, a Chilkat Nahkan weaver.
Shken George was examining one blanket in particular and noticed that it looked familiar.
She took a picture out of her camera and showed it to us, and she goes, look at this. And it looked like exact same blanket. And this blanket that they had the picture of was on a grave house. And if you looked at this blanket, you could see at the top of the blanket where it had been tacked onto the grave house and how part of it had been probably folded under so it wasn't weathered. So it was very interesting. They were wondering where that blanket went. And it was in the Smithsonian Institute.
Other items that were mislabeled were also corrected. Oliver, who teaches a Tlingit culture and language class in Wrangell's middle and high schools, was able to share her experience with her students by live streaming through a virtual reality camera.
That is the very first time that a camera was brought into the artifact collection. We would link up and they would look at some of the artifacts.
hours of footage were taken and may also be converted into two-dimensional video and shared with schools in Hoonah, Angoon, and Juneau. Oliver will not only share what she gleaned from the experience with her own students, but will give 6 presentations to the public. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Aaron Bolton.
For KHNS News, I'm Emily Files. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.